You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Now, it has been said that the Industrial Revolution was the most profound revolution in human history because of its sweeping impact on people's daily lives. And now the term Industrial Revolution is a succinct catchphrase to describe a historic period where the pace of change appeared to speed up. This acceleration in the processes of technical innovation brought about an array of new tools and machines. And joining us to dissect this a little bit more is, of course, a friend of the show once again, Justice Mukwebe. Good evening, sir.
Hey, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Trying. And yourself?
We're moving. We can solve. You know, as much as we are given the ability to move, we have to move.
We have to move. I suspect that the greatest tragedy would be to not move, eh?
Yay. Even the body does not stop functioning. Like,
exactly.
So why would we physically not move if the internal organs are moving?
If they are moving every moment, eh? Every minute, second
every
of the
second.
Day. Yeah, as long as we keep moving, that's really amazing. Once again, thank you so much for taking your time. Really appreciate it, of course. And we're talking about the Industrial Revolution and perhaps its impact on trade and labor. But before we get into that, maybe you might just want to, for our listeners who were not here the last time, Ubuntu Justice Mukwebe, who is he?
Justice Mukwebe is a young entrepreneur. A technopreneur, so we can put it that way, since words are so many. Justice Mukwebe is the director of Tombolanga and the founder of Tombolanga, a company that is an ICT-based that deals with innovation.
Yeah.
Since today we are continuing with innovation, we deal with innovation. Mm. In our company, we are working on developing virtual reality platforms for education. So that's Mukwebe Nkangwere in a nutshell. And he's also an environmental person. Mm. So he's an environmental officer on some of the other professions that I work on. But mostly he is an entrepreneur.
Ah, look at that. In some other professions we're working on. Hey, that's setting the standard right there. We wish all part the best. Yeah, no, you're doing really great, my brother. May God continue to bless you and your work. Let's go back then. Industrial Revolution, it's a term, catchphrase. Sometimes maybe it might be a hashtag somewhere or at some stage. What is this thing first? Before we even get into its impact and how it has swept the world over at the time, what are we talking about? Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, like you mentioned it. You know, I always try to find ways to simplify things and to make it as much simple as possible.
Yeah.
So Industrial Revolution, it can be signified as like a change at which people stopped using their own hands to do work and started more gradually using machines to do the work, or to minimize the amount of time that they would use when it comes to doing something if they were using their hands. Mm. So it was just like a shift of labor and responsibilities, let me put it that way. Mm. So we took our responsibility as people and maybe share some of that responsibility with the machines that were being invented during that time. So it was just a period at which this change was massive. It was big. It was something that nobody knew about.
Mm.
If you have watched our famous movie, The God Must Be Crazy, you would remember that Pico stumbled upon a bottle.
Yes.
A bottle of cold drink. So that was something crazy, something new, something wow to the entire community. And that process at which they were using the bottle for everything, it symbolizes how Industrial Revolution came into play. So this machine invention just came about and everybody now is trying to chip it into whatever industry that they are in to try to be involved and trying to see how it will work, how it will transform the industry. And it was just paving so many ways, just like that bottle. You know, it was now working as something to grind, as something big.
Yes.
You know, some others were using it for your parsley, right?
Yeah.
You know, making sure that the skin that they will wear can will be well off. Like the bottle was used for everything. So industrial revolution and machines to like maximize production and also make life easier. For the trade part and also for the people.
So it's interesting in that you're using, it's interesting that you're using that analogy. And I think it's a beautiful analogy, by the way, because I have a very vivid picture in my mind when he found that bottle, threw it in the air, it came back like, what is this thing? You know, and kept on passing it around.
It was the same with the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
At some point, we didn't want anything to do with machines because of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. Sure. I have a very vivid picture of it, I must tell you. I remember when they were passing it around and, you know, everyone was like, what is this thing? So as they some were afraid of it, you know, I suppose the same with Industrial Revolution. We are afraid of it at some stage, you know. And it seemed like this thing that's just not for us. But I suppose we'll get into this one as well, because if you remember from that movie itself, the end was that they started fighting for this thing. And, you know, some people ended up getting hurt because of it, and they wanted to throw this thing as far away from them as they possibly can, because clearly the gods must be crazy. This, with this thing that they gave to us, exactly. Like so that's what I'm saying. I love the analogy that you're using there, because I think it will help us to actually make the points that we're trying to make then, without even getting ahead of myself, because I'm already excited about this talk. But, let's go back then. Machine utilization, you know, kind of getting machines to do some of the stuff. When were the people even, you know, seeing it coming when it was about to happen, this Industrial Revolution? And perhaps why? So why, where, when? What happened? Was this some sort of big thing that started somewhere and is continuing today?
Yeah, maybe just to answer your first question,
maybe
we'll use the analogy of the god must be crazy.
Yeah,
nobody knew the bottle was coming, right?
Eish.
But only the person who found the bottle like knew he was taking it to the family, to the community.
Yeah,
right. So the visionary, the inventors, the people that, you know, were trying to come up with easier ways of doing things. Where I'm working, we kind of use a lot of Excel, right?
Yeah.
So when you're using Excel, you have different groups of people in a company. There are people that are not aware of it, right? But they know about it. And there are those that are new and they've heard about it. And they're new to it, and now you have to teach them how to use it. Or they have to just jump into the ship and learn as the ship is moving. And there are those that are just reluctant about it. They just don't want anything to do with Excel, and they wish that they could just retire soon, or they wish nobody else would come and tell them that they should use Excel.
Yeah.
And then there are those who will always come up with formulas of making the work very much easier. When it comes to the Excel, right?
Yeah.
So even with the Industrial Revolution, there are people that did not know anything about it at all. There are people that had someone is an inventor. You know, back then there was less information, was in a form of word of mouth.
Yeah.
So you would hear that someone did this, someone did that. And that's how information would actually move around.
Yeah.
Until someone decided to invent something like a telegraph.
Yeah.
Which was helpful because people could read the telegraph maybe once a month or once in 2 months or once in a fortnight.
Yeah.
Which was easier to disseminate information.
Yeah.
So these Industrial Revolution takes us back to the 1700s where the inventions all started. So we can talk about the time frame between the 1700s and the 1900s, which includes the 1760s, the 1770s, the 1820s, right? So in between that period is where we had an influx of Industrial Revolution. And one of the most widely spoken of is the steam train, which most people will talk about. If you go to any Industrial Revolution talk or 4IR talk or your blockchain talks, they will, if they're given a background of Industrial Revolution, they will always talk about a steam train, right? Which is like one of the key key, I can call them key parts or what, or maybe key figure that we can look at when it comes to the Industrial Revolution. And as to the why, right, it was mostly because of the invention, right? Someone was thinking about a better way of doing something, an easier way of doing something, a faster way of producing something. So then in machines were invented to help with the workload. Some were in a form of tools. Some were in, you know, just big industrial machines that could move things faster and that could do things faster. And the use of the steam train, like I mentioned, right, and other kinds of power that were used back in the day, and also the adoption of the factory system of how things can move around inside a factory from one point to the other, and then you only see the product of what the factory is producing. So, for instance, if the factory is only producing cotton, like what do you call it, wool, right? So it will start with the raw product that is going to be used to make the wool, and the involvement of other systems that are inside the factory until wool is a byproduct within the same factory system. So that's how the entire Industrial Revolution just exploded and boomed. So, you know, from your Europe to America to all these major economies, and your China, and to many other parts of the world. And in South Africa, we can talk about the time where gold and diamond was discovered, diamond to begin with, then gold. So that's where we also got involved, because mostly we were focused on your agriculture as a means of survival. But then these discoveries led to your Industrial Revolution happening. If you go around Johannesburg, if you go around Kimberley, you would see that there were so these sophisticated machines that are very much old, some of which you just look at them and be like, yeah, these people really had a great mind, you know, that helped them to, or they were visionaries, or they had something in mind that can actually help them dig gold from way deep underground, which actually maximized the production, and the amount of time that was used was less. So we can talk about the steam train, the spinning jenny, which revolutionized cotton spinning, and also the telegraph, like I mentioned. So those are the earliest inventions that we can talk about when it comes to Industrial Revolution.
Sure. You've given such a beautiful, succinct way for us to understand where this thing started. And I think you said something there around the main reason why there was these steam trains and all these other revolutions or changes in mechanization was because it was all trying to make life easier for people.
Yeah, so in a simple way, we can put it like that.
Yeah, okay.
And also not forgetting the trade part. Eh?
Yes.
Not forgetting the trade part, because you know, whoever is thinking is not only trying to make life easier, but to try and see how can I move my product, how can I create more product,
in fact,
how can I meet the demand. Right?
That's what I was going to say. Then in the world of trade, how did these changes, you know, make things much easier? I'm thinking you mentioned something around, you know, how, for instance, some countries were still on the agricultural sector, still stuck there, you know, and in the manual way of doing things. But with Industrial Revolution and steam trains and mechanization, it became much, much easier. It meant then that the world becomes a little bit opened up, right? That one can trade with the rest of the world. Faster things, produce faster, and then can be transported to the rest of the world with the steam train, for instance.
Definitely. So in as far as trade was concerned back then, which we can also still maybe apply it in the modern society, just that right now things are much more faster. You know, you can order something from the States and you can get it by in the next 24 hours, depending on how much you're going to pay, obviously. So this machine-based manufacturing, like the entire process that was just inside a basic community, and now they've got machines that are assisting them to do work. So this actually caused a great deal of productivity, right? There was increase in productivity. Now a manufacturer could produce 2 times or 10 times more than people were able to produce on their own. So now this production, you know, you have got this, all these products that have been produced, or maybe let's say the producer is producing steel, and steel is needed, right? It's a need that people need to build their infrastructure or their railroads or whatever that they needed at that time. Now, this company is able to produce more and faster because the mine that is supplying them with the raw material is also able to produce faster now. Other than people digging, it's now producing faster. And the same mine, if it is the one that is, you know, refining the entire minerals, it's now been able to do it much faster than it would be when people were burning whatever fossil fuel that they were using in order for them to generate the iron and end up making steel. So now there's this great production that is happening around. But then now you start having a lot of things in one place. The demand is also starting to grow because you've got ready products, and you've also created a niche market for people to want the iron, because now people around them are able to buy that iron. Mm. So then it also increased the productivity, which led to the growth of trade.
Mm.
So now the growth of trade in terms of how big the market is or how big they've created the market for the steel, people now everywhere want the steel. Because mind you, at that time, it was rare for people to have steel to build or to do whatever that they want to do. It was only a specific people that could get hold of it, right? And now it's big. Everyone is making it.
Yeah.
Or these big companies are able to produce maximum amount of it. So now the trade grows. So as it grows, now you get orders from very far away. You need to transport those orders. Now the donkey would not be able to transport them very far in an effective manner or in a short space of time. Then the development or the invention of the steam train comes about, which made the transport industry at that time much more easier. Which we look at it today, the steam train is like almost 100 times slower than the current fastest train today. Right? So which means if we can just maybe merge it together, we can see how great these industrial revolution has revolutionized in terms of trade, in terms of how fast goods are being transported. And now we're talking about air transport, we can talk about fast sea transport, and we can also talk about road transport, which is very fast and very much effective. So this demand also grew into international trade, and now we had ships that were steam ships that were transporting goods from overseas to countries that are far from the big market, right? So that's how, in terms of trade, this industrial revolution has disrupted it or impacted, either way you can put it.
I actually have two questions in what you're saying, because it's very, very important. I'm thinking here, with the steam train, for instance, as it revolutionized and everything else, were there industries that perhaps were left behind in the revolution, either because maybe they were a little bit slower to, you know, the changes that maybe the steam train brought about at that particular time, and other related that were faster in catching up with the revolution at the time? Were there industries that were almost left behind and maybe suffered detrimentally because of that?
Yeah, we can talk about maybe traditional trade.
Yeah.
Those were some of the trades that were mostly affected. Even the people, in terms of labor, those people were mostly affected because they couldn't easily go and work in your factory where they are producing this, where there's mass production of some sort. They were mostly affected. So those kind of crafts, kind of like traditional crafts, you know, the people that were dealing with who were sewing with their hands and they couldn't actually transact into the market, those were mostly affected. And some part of agriculture was also partly affected in many areas.
Yeah.
Because now everybody was now going to the factories because there was more money there, and other than just, you know, plowing and hoping to get to sell your crops and get to make money. So at some point in many places agriculture was also affected, and in some places where agriculture was sold and there was there were no like minerals that can be harvested there or that can be dug there, but they could only plant or the community is mostly a vegetation kind of like community where they will rely more on agriculture. Now that's the point where agriculture lived to survive. But then in other places where they were having a lot of minerals, say for instance, Kimberley, you know, we do know that it's very hot. Let's say that Kimberley as it is, they had like a portion to plant or to survive in terms of vegetable. Then the diamond mine happens. In the same place, it would actually just come up in plain sight that people were going to move from vegetation into the mine because that's where they would easily make money. So the other industries and other parts of the other departments that happened that were there at that time were mostly affected because of the issue of this and industrial revolution that was coming about. So yeah, I could just talk about traditional craft and anything related to that. You know, you posed me like I made an example with that.
Yeah.
So those were some of the trades that were mostly affected at that time because of the issue of these big factories that were happening at that time.
Yeah. Well, they say sometimes that change obviously opens up opportunities, depending, I suppose, on which side of the spectrum you are at, but also simply because the only constant in life is change. So one has to be aware of any changes that are happening in the world and, you know, technological changes and how things are moving like that. Otherwise, you will get left behind. And so maybe that's what happened with these industries as well. I'm thinking, and I'm sitting here because obviously we are an African continent that a lot of people would say that there's a lot of potential in the country, in the continent, that's not tapped into because of slow changes. We are trailing technology, we are trailing the revolution itself. I've been hearing people saying that the fourth revolution that we are talking about is even past in some parts of the world. The world is moving to the fifth and sixth industrial revolution, all those sort of stuff. Is Africa lagging behind the revolution?
If we can put it in this perspective, that if we say it's Africa lagging behind the revolution or slowing it down, if we put it in a human basis, like if we refer to Africa as the people, as the leaders, then yes, we can say that the leaders, Africa is the leaders, are slowing it down in many parts of the country, right?
Yeah.
Because if you can even look at our own country, we had, you know, so many opportunities which are still there. We've got so many young people with bright minds that if given an opportunity to do something, they can be able to lead the country to leapfrog some of the industrial revolutions that have not impacted certain parts of the country, let me put it that way. Certain parts of the country, and we can jump straight into the fourth industrial revolution, which at some segments we see it, you know, we see it at some point, but we don't see it at a magnitude as to other countries, like you mentioned, that are at. So if in Africa, so to say, is a person or people that are leading the country, then yes, I can say that they are slowing down the progress because we've got all that we need. Right.
Yeah.
There are so many minerals in our country, in our continent
that
have been mined to develop the very same industrial revolution in other countries.
Yeah.
So I can say that I can agree with that notion that Africa on its own, like if we're referring to it as the leader, it's slowing down its own industrial revolution.
And I'm asking this because if you look at the trade that Africa has with the rest of the world, we mostly trade on your agricultural products. For instance, the other year, I think in South Africa, there was an issue about the Eurozone saying they don't want citrus from South Africa. You know, you look at the other African countries, it's mostly agricultural trade that we are exporting to the rest of the world besides the minerals and everything. But that's why I'm asking, are we lagging behind? Because it seems like we are still in the primary sector of the economies, and that's what we are trading with the rest of the world, as opposed to the world that's beneficiating, for instance, some of the very minerals that they are getting from Africa. They are beneficiating them in the tertiary sector. And what's even better is that they're selling those things back to us as products now, whether it's, rings and chains and all those sort from the diamond that they get from the African continent. And they beneficiate quite a lot of the other things. That's what I'm thinking about as you're saying that and thinking how we seem to be lagging the revolution. And that that is impeding our trade with the rest of the world. When the first country in the world that's leading the world, the US and China, the second one, are all in Africa trying to find ways in which they can increase trade. And here we are sitting and lagging behind that revolution.
We can put it in the basis of maybe post-trauma, however we might want to put it.
Yeah.
I believe that our parents and all the other leaders of the African leaders that are there, of which you have seen that we have less young leaders that are there who never maybe went through the struggle and all those kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So now we've got leaders that went through the struggle, they lived through the system, and during the time of the struggle, all that they could depend on, most people, is, you know, something that was more like an handout, something that was done for them, right? And they had to fight to get something that was already done. So it was never something that we could start something from scratch and build it our own and create it for ourselves and modify it on our own. It was always something that was done, and then we get to fight to get that something.
Yeah.
So it becomes very hard when now you have to start something from scratch, like building our own major factories to refine our own gold, to refine our own diamonds, to do things for ourselves, major factories on our own that can help us to, you know, for us to get to a point where we can refine our own oil, so we can move it from one country to another in a way that will help us to be sufficient. So if we can look at it in that way, until we change that narrative and change our mindset and free ourselves from the fact that we are waiting for someone to do something, then we fight to get that something that is already done, then I think we will be able to move freshly into what we would call our own industrial revolution. Perhaps maybe we'll be able to coin it. We might even decide to go back to the first and say that the first that is said to be the first cannot be the first in our own definition. We make our own. So, if we can change our mindset towards that, then I believe that we will be able to move very much profoundly.
I would say, Mr. Mokgwebo, for president in Africa, you know, right now, because we really need those type of influences across the African continent, because really our leaders are taking us back, are really taking us back when we have the potential to be leading the world. I'm one of those that believe that Africa should be leading the world on so many things. We have the youngest population across the world. Estimates and, you know, these forecasts are that by 2030, Africa will have the youngest population in the world, because the population in the, you know, more so-called developed world is aging. These guys are aging. You look at President Biden. He wants another term, but he's old already, you know. So if we were to take that as anecdotal, you know, we have the opportunities in Africa, and we are not exploiting those as much as we possibly can from an industrial. Like you said, I love the point that you're making, that sometimes maybe the problem is that we want to adapt our own understanding of what the revolution is by what the world has defined for us as the first and second. Maybe let's go back. Nothing wrong with us going back and redefining the revolution.
It's just like if we go back to the industrial revolution of how it has really affected, you know, the labor part of society. There are always gatekeepers that will always be there. And it really also affected people in a sense that as time goes on, you know, the boom, right? Now we've got industrial revolution. People are starting to work. People are able to get, you know, a better salary now. Then someone on the trade part decides that, no, I cannot pay people so much money. I'm losing on my business. Then they decide to opt for, you know, ways in which that they will be able to exploit people that are going to be working for them, and creating horrible conditions for the workers, poor nutrition, stressful and unsatisfying lifestyles that they had to live at that time, and to work in dangerous places. Because remember, when something is new, you're less likely to even have PPEs to work in those places.
Yeah.
So there were gatekeepers back then, just the way there are gatekeepers in the current society that we're living in. And it's just like a tug of war. You know, as labor pushes to the other side, now industrial revolution pushes to the other side, now the trade is pushing to the other side, now the employees are now pushing to the left side. Now who gets to win? The one with the upper hand.
Yeah.
And who gets to have the upper hand at that time?
Yeah.
In this case, could be the trade, you know, backing up with the industrial revolution that is currently continuing. You know, right now we're in machine, more advanced machines that can make decisions based on whatever narrative they're given at that time.
Yeah.
They're able to do the job. They don't get tired.
Yeah.
And they're able to cook if given the instruction to do so. So who gets to win at the end of the day?
Yeah.
What gets to be disrupted?
Yeah.
So those gatekeeping are more or less the same thing as what we're also facing as a country, as a continent. You know, to say that there are gatekeepers that are, and there's this big tug of war that is happening between the industrial revolution that is happening on the outside. So we have gatekeepers that are blocking us to join in the tug of war in order for us to be able to push better and be part of this major industrial revolution that could change Africa for the better.
Talking about that one, as we draw to a close, I saw someone who was talking about, for instance, the Internet of Things. You know, you could walk into your house and clap your hands and then things start switching on, you know. When you are not around, they switch off to save electricity and all that. Sounds very interesting and sounds very intimidating at the same time. What does the future look like? Fifth, sixth industrial revolution. I know when 5G came, you know, it seemed like your 666 is here, you know, and the world is about to end. And I remember Y2K, for those of us who lived through Y2K, you know. It's almost like when there's changes, when there's this revolution, innovation, it seems like the world is coming to an end. And we try and then make it look like that as Christians, as people who believe, I suppose, in the coming of Christ. But what does the future look like from here?
Well, the future is, I can say that in terms of technology, it's going to be complicated and in a way, plain sight, right? Because when we're looking at just the fourth industrial revolution on its own, not talking about cyber physical systems and the Internet of Things, like you've mentioned, the networks, right? You know, your 5G, your fibers that are currently in place, the speed of things, on how things should be happening. I think it's going to be much more complicated and interesting for people that are still trying to leapfrog and trying to understand the third industrial revolution, the automation, the computers and the electronics. People that are still trying to understand that, the time if ever we just wake up tomorrow and someone already has structured and coined fifth industrial revolution, then it's going to be complicated for them in that instance. And countries that are still trying to get to that point, there will be a major confusion and, you know, in how do we adapt, how do we compete, how do we get involved? What do we do from here? You know, there will be so many questions, and at some point, maybe nobody will have an answer. And then we're going to have to start to look at where do we go wrong, which would, by the time we realize where we went wrong, then the sixth industrial revolution is coming. But for those that are already in it and understanding it, I think it will be very interesting, you know, depending on where you are. Let's say maybe for our country as it is, you look at Johannesburg, you look at your Sandton and many other, you know, your waterfront, you know, all those emerging big cities in the country or big places where there's a lot of innovation that is happening. If we look into those people that are going to be living around those places, they are the ones that will be much more fortunate and it will be much more great for them. You know, as time goes on, having cars that drive themselves, we already have a number of electrical cars in our country. You know, factories that have been opened, those will be mostly controlled by machines. You will less likely bump into a lot of people, because when there's a machine, you just need minimal human activity for just to monitor what is happening, you know, to until the machine gets to a point where it can monitor itself, or the other machine can monitor the other machine to do the work, which I don't think we're going to be having anytime soon in our country, or maybe in the world, so to say. But there are countries that are already ahead, like way ahead. So yeah, I think it's going to be looking very beautiful and very nice, but then also complicated and sophisticated for people that are still trying to leapfrog and understand the third industrial revolution.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. What would be your last message then? Should people say, you know, as much as all the changes are coming, they shouldn't be afraid? What would be your advice to them?
I wouldn't say people should be afraid. I think people should be aware. You know, conversations like this help us to understand. Yeah. I love how we didn't actually go to the other side or too deep technical about it, which makes every person understand what this industrial revolution is all about and where it's going, right? That makes much more sense in this kind of conversation and how it's affecting the trade and how it had affected employment. Yeah. Now, to further how it's going to affect employment in the coming day and time, I think people should upskill, you know, never stop learning. Myself as a person, I have got different skills that I always try to push myself to learn. Like, I remember when I applied for a job, I a week before I did, I didn't know that I was going to get called for an interview.
Yes.
So I started in Excel. I started working on Excel. I was like, no, let me, there's just one app that I never liked using at all because of how complicated I felt like it was. Then I did a certificate online for Excel just to boost my CV. Only to find that the work I'm going to be doing on the first few months, I'm going to be using Excel a lot. That helped me to get back every day at home and try to wake up how to do this, how to work better, how to work smarter, how to generate formulas, how to understand this thing so that it can also put me ahead at work and it can also make me better at what I'm doing and also help me to work efficient. So that is what people should be doing right now. We should be learning the new skills. If we say that there is a new robot that is coming up, try to learn how can you develop a robot? How can you fix a robot? What skills, what are the opportunities for you to be there? Because the only thing that will set us apart in the long run from the robots and the entire AI is emotional intelligence, which they would not have. We are only going to be having that emotional intelligence. And self-awareness is something that we are not going to be looking at the present time in the near future, right? It will just be following commands. But we have that upper hand. So people need to upgrade themselves and upskill, you know, learn computer science, learn coding, learn things, skills that are currently going to put you into a better position and, you know, let go of fear. So I wouldn't say people should be scared.
Yeah, they should let go of fear. Once again, like you said, we haven't unpacked the technical side of things. So it's just laying the foundation here of what this thing could look like going forward and how it could affect even other industries, you know, not just the trade and, you know, labor and all. We could literally look at it from different angles as well. But foundation, we're going to call you once again to just unpack this technically as well. But appreciate your time and your insights. And the way in which you've made this easier for us is appreciated indeed. And may God continue to bless you and your work and the work that your company does as well.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. And it's always a pleasure
really
to talk about these things.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
The best. That was Mr. Justice Mukwebo there talking to us about the Industrial Revolution and its impact on trade and labor.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.